You're listening to Jedi and Germs, a weekly podcast brought to you by the Torn by Sports Podcast Network and blogtalkradio.com. I'm Alan Zog, the Jedi. He's John English, the Germs guy. Hi, John.
Hi.
How are you?
I'm great.
Fantastic. And of course, as always, it is wonderful to see the bright-eyed, wide-awake Devin Masters, right? Right? Wide-awake, right?
Listen to me. Listen to me. You must do exactly as I say on this podcast, or we are not going to make it.
Wow.
John, do you understand me? We are not going to make it.
But what if it's beautiful outside?
Listeners, do not take your headphones off or you will die.
Yes.
You will die.
Yes, listeners, you're hearing correctly. One of us has not seen it yet. The other two have, and most of you probably have ahead of me as well. So you know where Devin's going with this. Later on in the show, we will be talking about Bird Box. So.
Okay.
All right. Let's kick off with our first topic, as always, the Utah Jazz.
The Utah Jazz went 1-1 during this last week, and the schedule thing is over. Yes, they've had one of the hardest schedules up to this point, but that is now done. They're 18-20. The season's almost halfway over. They were 16-22 at this point last year. So there is hope, but last year they could blame a lot on injuries. You can't really blame a lot on injuries this year. So this is, we're at a point now where there can't be any schedule grumbles, because it's going to be really easy for the next couple of months. And if they're giving away games that they shouldn't, then, you know, not only is home court advantage out of the question, making the playoffs at all might be out of the question if they can't take advantage of what's coming up in the next 2 months.
So I know there's a few trends that people get on that would suggest concern for the Jazz, but there are also trends that I'm looking at that would suggest there shouldn't be concern at all. One of those being the Jazz's road record. I mean, they have played 22 road games, I believe, mm-hmm. and they're 10-12. I mean, they've already got 10 wins on the road with 19 remaining. I have to believe they're going to win half of those 19, should put them at 10, which should put them right there at 20 wins on the road. If they, you know, some of the other trends set aside, their road record to me indicates that they're still okay.
Yeah. When you compare them to other teams, the only other teams in the West that are as good or better are all in the playoffs. The ones where you have to look at them and say, okay, I don't think this is going to last. You look at Dallas; they're 3-16. They're a half game ahead of the Jazz right now.
Right.
But if they're that bad on the road, you know, how much longer can they sustain it? And a lot of teams like the Lakers and Blazers, and all of them are 2-under on the road. And then you're, you know, super good teams like, let's see, who's the top right now? Nuggets. Nuggets are the number one team. They're 10-8 on the road.
Right.
So it's really just a matter of the Jazz have not been that good at home. They're 8-8 at home.
Right.
They are among the low end as far as having home games so far. So if they can, now that they got a lot of this hard stuff out of the way and then clean it up at home and get back to like a 75% winning percentage at home, that's your recipe.
And then here's the other trend that really was a kicker for me the other day. And I'm sure you saw this graphic posted the other day. Hardwood Paroxysm, HP Basketball, tweeted out or retweeted and shared what somebody had said about the West's road records. The Jazz and Denver are the only two teams at or above, or at, I would say at this point in time, is still the same. I haven't checked, but at 500. Everybody else in the West on the road is below 500. Against each other. That's not against the East. Against each other.
Oh, against each other.
Yeah. So the Jazz and Denver Nuggets against the rest of the West are playing 500 basketball on the road. To me, that's also a positive trend for the Jazz, considering what they've played so far.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's encouraging.
So it was very interesting to read. And within the conference, I mean, the Jazz are 12-12 in the conference right now. The last time I checked, I don't know if that's changed as well, but 500 in conference overall suggests
pretty, 12-12
suggests pretty good for me too. I mean, the West is murder's row. If you're playing 500 ball in the West, that's not bad. Is it?
No, it's not. It means that they're not doing as well against the East as I would like, but at least they're doing good against the West.
Now that same graphic, the same guy that posted that graphic also posted, or somebody else did, that the Western Conference is something like 175 to, I don't know, like single digits when it comes to against the East right now in wins.
Yeah.
I mean, that's ridiculous how much the disparity is between the conferences, which we have not been shy on talking about in past years, but I think this year might be the worst I've seen. Would you agree?
Mm. Yeah.
So I just think there's positives to think about with the Jazz. I think they're, you know, we're nearing the halfway point, 38 games. We've got four more, and at the halfway point, we're playing close to 500 ball with the easiest part of the schedule remaining. I think the Jazz are going to be fine. I really do. Let's talk about the upcoming schedule.
Okay. So they are in the middle of a four game road trip. They got three more road games, and the next two are Cleveland and Detroit, and it ends with Milwaukee. I would say Cleveland and Detroit are must win games.
Yes.
Milwaukee, I would assume they're going to lose, and then that's followed up by a home game against Orlando. So I would say the Jazz are going to go 3-1, and anything less than that is unacceptable.
And in case people are wondering at this point in time, the last time I checked the schedule or checked the standings, the Milwaukee Bucks are the best team in the NBA right now, record-wise.
Yes, they are playing incredibly.
Yes.
They're 26-10 right now. That is, as of this moment, the best record in the NBA. They're on a four-game win streak, it looks like. They're a good road team. They're 9-7 on the road. Doesn't matter. We're playing at home. At home, they're 17-3.
Yeah.
Let's see. Let's look at the home records of the others. Cleveland at home is, 5-14. Detroit is 11-8. So, okay. But the Detroit and Utah have similar records, but Detroit's had an easier schedule up to this point. So I still have to win that game. And then Milwaukee would be amazing if they won. And then they get Orlando at home, and Orlando on the road is 7-9. So yes, I stand by it.
I'm saying 3-1 over the next four.
Yeah.
Which if they go 3-1, they're right at 500 at 21-21.
Yep.
So Devin, any disagreement with you on how we see the next four games rolling out?
No. Okay. I'll be honest. I think the game I'm most excited about seeing is the one against Cleveland.
Me too.
I'm looking forward to seeing Hood and seeing Burks. And, you know, I'm sad that first-year coach Ty Lue is not there anymore. But
yeah.
it should be fun to kind of see that on the court banter. I think there'll be a little back and forth with some of the guys, you know. Ron, did you guys see the interview that Rodney did?
No.
Where he was talking about, oh, it's all love. He doesn't have any problems with the Jazz or the players. And, you know, he doesn't worry. It's one game in the grand scheme of things. It doesn't matter. You know, we're just going to go out and play hard and have fun.
I'm going to say this. I think AB is having the better of the two careers right now in Cleveland. I think AB's played better. But I haven't looked at the overall numbers. I just know AB's had a recent good stretch of games. They moved him into the starting lineup. He had one game in single digits, but he's been averaging double figures, 15, 16, 17 points a game over that stretch otherwise, I believe.
Yeah, he's overall, he's getting 11-5.
Yeah.
Hood is getting 12, and you know, Hood's never been that good at the other numbers.
Right.
So AB is putting up more solid numbers, 11 points, 5 rebounds, 2.7 assists, 0.8 steals. Yeah, he's having a pretty decent run there right now.
And you mentioned AB's two stats there. That's the two stats that he was good at here in Salt Lake. He could score, but he was also, I think, one of the better rebounding guards the Jazz had at the time.
Yep.
So, all right. So after this four-game road trip, you wanted to look into the schedule a little deeper. You mentioned they've got 8 of 9 at home.
Yes. And when you look at the teams that they're facing in those, they should be able to win the vast majority of them. They should be able to, I would say they should be 8-2 at the end of their last 10 when we hit that part, because your home stretch starts with Orlando, Lakers, Bulls, Pistons, a road game against the Clippers, who've been wobbly lately, and then you're back at home for another 4 games against the Cavs, Blazers, Nuggets, and Timberwolves. You know, there are a couple challenging games in there, but, you know, that stretch to me, I mean, after we get done with the Bucks, and they should be at 500 at that point, then you look at the next 9 games right there. I'll just say 10 games because their 10th game is a road game with Minnesota. They should win 8 of those 10.
Easily. I mean, okay.
Not easily.
Let me back it off. Not easily. I realized my error in ways when I said easily. But no, they should. Flat out, they just should. So, and you know, if they win 8 of 10, if they go 3-1, they win 8 of 10, suddenly, you know, they're 29 and 24. You know, they're 4 or 5 games above 500. Things start to look a little bit more on the bright side as we stretch, you know, and move forward.
Mm-hmm.
So, any other Jazz notes you want to talk about? I mean, it's pretty quick cut and dry week for the Utah Jazz.
Well, one thing I did want to touch on, I was listening to Locke this morning and he was going over his points gained stats, formerly known as PAC. And I found it disturbing that Donovan Mitchell is one of the worst points gained players in the league right now.
Interesting.
Yeah, he's about as efficient as Westbrook and Colin Sexton and just the guys you expect to be down there. But that's something to keep an eye on.
So, I'm without being too much on a soapbox, I want to touch on Donovan Mitchell for a minute here. People are rough on him right now, and rightly so. I mean, I'll give people the benefit of the doubt. I get it. But the one thing I want, there's a couple of points I want to make regarding his slump, if you will, and the why he's down at that end. I want Donovan to keep doing what he's doing. I know people don't like to hear that, but he has to. And we have to be patient and allow it, because Donovan's going to get better because of it. Donovan's going to get better because of his failures, because of his mistakes, because of what he's doing. He's going to get better. And we already know that because he spends time in the film room. He critiques himself. He looks at the things he's doing on the court and he tries to get better. It's just going to happen. And people need to step off that ledge a little bit, take a step back and let it happen. I'm okay with watching Donovan evolve as a player right before our eyes, in the court, in game situations. 30 seconds left in the game, if he takes an ill-advised three-point shot, fine. I'll live with it, because 10 games down the road, even 5 years down the road, he's not going to do that. Is he inefficient right now? Yeah. he's a high-volume shooter. It's what it's proving to be right now. But the other thing I want to see from him is I'd like to see him get to the free throw line more. And that's going to come with as he becomes a veteran, as he learns and he grows too. And so I don't know. I want your thoughts, if you agree with me and what your thoughts are, but I think we need to push the brakes a little bit on Donovan. Let him learn, let him grow.
Yes. Let him learn, let him grow. But it is a fact that right now, he's one of the least efficient offensive players in the NBA.
Right.
Him and Rubio actually have very similar numbers when you're looking at true shooting percentage, efficient field goal percentage. And Rubio's been known his whole career as not being a good shooter. So that is just something to keep an eye on. The sophomore season tends to be very revealing about players.
Yep.
And so, you know, we all saw his rookie year. It looks like he's going to be amazing. His sophomore year, he's a little cringy with some of his efficient nights. But he is playing through that. And I think that once we're getting into an easier part of the schedule and the game comes to him easy, a little simpler, then his numbers will go up. But you have other guys with additional pressures that are kind of contributing to that. Like Joe Ingles, his shooting efficiency is down.
Right.
His points game stat, actually right now he's at zero. And Joe was always one of the better ones in that stat. So other guys aren't shooting as well as they did last year either. Not that they were great shooters last year either. I remember feeling that last year and thinking in the offseason, man, they really need to get a shooter on this team. And Grayson Allen was a decent draft pick for that, but Grayson just wasn't quite ready for the NBA level yet.
Right.
And now that they have Korver, I think that's all going to change. I think next week I want to look more into the stats of everybody before Korver showed up and what they are now that Korver showed up.
Oh, finally, somebody who wants to do something like that, because I have been wanting to see something like that for about 2 weeks now. Of course, we've had small sample sizes. I think it's starting to grow now. We can do that.
Yeah, I'll go into that next week.
And my last thought on Donovan Mitchell is you also have to realize he took the NBA by storm as a rookie. Defenses aren't going to let him surprise them anymore. If he surprises defenses, it's because he learns to evolve the game in such that he starts to dictate the game for them rather than letting the defense dictate to him. And that's a big difference between his game right now. I still think he's in a transition point where defenses are cued in on him, which is dictating what he has to do on the floor. When Donovan gets to be real good is when Donovan steps out on the court and says, defend me, good luck. And he just goes out there and does what he wants when he wants to, gets to the free throw line when he wants to. And that's the thing about Donovan. He's got to get to the free throw line. And when he does, and when he starts getting those calls, and he's getting a few already, but when he starts getting more of those calls, defenses are going to find it hard to adjust to his game. And then we're going to see what I think we all want.
Yeah.
So, Devin, you have anything to throw in on that?
No, I'm still singing Third Eye Blind over here in my head.
About?
Well, you said that they needed to step back from that ledge, my friend.
Hey, wow, very good. Well
and,
played.
And I thought about jumping in and just singing it, but I didn't think that would be appropriate.
I wish you would step back from that ledge, my friend.
But no, I don't know. It's just one of those things. The sophomore slump is real, isn't it?
You know, absolutely.
It happens. And I don't think we can overreact. I don't think we should give him a pass because a lot of things come down to decision making.
Right.
And there have been questionable decisions made, but you're still a second year player and learning how to play in this league as far as I'm concerned. So,
and again, with limitations, defenses are queuing in on him more and the teammates around him aren't exactly, you know, aside from a sharp shooting Joe Ingles or Kyle Korver, Ricky Rubio isn't the shooter. And until we get guys that, I don't know, is there a reality check here, John, where until we get guys that can hit shots with consistency, then we're probably going to see, you know, inefficient Donovan for a while.
Yeah.
So, all right. That does it for Utah Jazz news. Let's move on to NBA news and notes. John, I saw you tweet something about the Golden State-Houston game. Let's hit that first thing.
Yes, I watched the overtime of that game, and that was a game where I was actually kind of hoping the Warriors would win just because, you know, Harden. But after seeing KD dance four steps out of bounds and the refs still not call it when he hit the ball back into play, and then Klay is able to hit the shot off of that, the injustice of that made me swing right back and go, okay, I actually hope the Rockets win this. And then Harden hit this amazing three-pointer to clinch the win. So it was a roller coaster of emotion watching how that game wound up.
Is that the worst call you've ever seen in a basketball game?
It's probably the worst one since Dick Bavetta said that Howard Eisley's three, which was at the top of its arc when the clock hit zero, had not been shot in time.
You're talking the infamous Game 6 halftime.
Yes.
Yeah.
I would say between that and then this one right there, I'm having a hard time thinking of any other worse calls. That was really bad. There are three refs on the floor. One of them, their job is to watch that line down there on the row. I do not understand how you could miss that.
Yeah, it doesn't make sense to me either.
Do you think that perhaps they were going off of soccer rules where the player can be out, but the ball can't be out?
Devin, this is NBA we're talking about, not soccer. Why are you bringing soccer into it?
I'm wondering if perhaps they had someone from the wrong league show up, and they're like, that's good.
I'm waiting for the L2M report today. Yeah, we got that wrong, blah, blah, blah.
I'm sure that'll be in there.
I just wish there had been, like, someone who, like, had put their arm up and been like, corner kick. And you're like, what?
My question is, for calls like that, an L2M report is great, but when is the NBA going to stop protecting its officials and call out things when they happen? You know, you're willing to call out players and fine them. When are you going to do that with an official for making a call like that?
Well, did you see it?
No. Oh. I've heard, I saw plenty of reaction over it. And
Someone should be fired.
Tony Jones is one of those ones I saw where he says, in all my years covering basketball, that's the worst call I've ever seen. Something to that effect. I can't remember what he said.
Well, if you go to official.nba.com, they have the replay video right there if you want to look at it.
Oh, gosh.
I don't think the last 2 minute report's up yet, but yeah, it's right there on their site.
I just, I get that these refs are under a lot of pressure, but at some point in time, you have to expect better. And if Pac-12 refs aside, Devin, sorry, I had to insert that, NBA officiating might be one of the toughest leagues to officiate, but also is one of the most poorly officiated leagues in the world. Would you disagree?
No, I don't disagree. But the thing is, if your product is this bad on the court, you do something about it.
Thank you. That's what I'm saying.
If it's the guys can't keep up because these are athletes, well, maybe you get some younger officials.
Yeah.
Or maybe you add a fourth official, which is what they really should have.
Right.
Is one on each sideline and one on each baseline.
Right.
By the way, the out of bounds clip they have on their site is a different out of bounds clip.
Oh, all right. Never mind.
I was shocked they had it there, but it was a different one.
Can you imagine how bold that would be?
Yeah.
Just like, hey, look what we did, and you can't do anything about it.
Oh, all right. We could bag on the officials all day long. Let's switch gears for a moment. You mentioned James Harden. John, I saw a graphic the other day. James Harden's playing out of his mind. And coincidentally, Houston has risen from the 14th seed to the 4th seed. Just like that. I don't know his numbers, and I don't remember the stretch. It's 5, 6 games, 7 games, but he's putting up 40 points a game. It's a bunch of ridiculous numbers. I don't like the guy. He's unwatchable as far as I'm concerned, but man, is he putting up big numbers right now.
Huh. Yeah, I mean,
I love that response.
I was looking at something else. I know that there's been talk about him repeating MVP. I saw it was a topic on the Starters the other day. And you know, yes, his numbers are great, but I can't help but think that if the Rockets finish somewhere in the 50s win-wise, that more people are going to want to reward what Kawhi is doing or what Giannis is doing, because they're putting up similar numbers
on
teams with better records. And, you know, really, I mean, I think your top three are Kawhi, Giannis, and Harden as far as MVP discussions are concerned, especially since the Rockets have now shot their way back up into home court in the playoffs. I just have a really hard time with it.
I know. Well, I agree. And I'm going to ask you a really bold question here. James Harden or Westbrook, which one would you prefer to watch? And which one do you think is the more efficient player?
I don't know. That'd be a good one to look up.
I mean, you talked about locks ratings.
I think they're all dang efficient.
Yeah, you talked about locks ratings. And I've seen some people pick apart Westbrook recently, indicating that he gets his rebounds by way of, I think it was a conversation that Tony Jones was having the other day, But
oh, he stat hunts. Westbrook definitely stat hunts.
Yeah, stat hunts, which is why maybe Harden is the more efficient and less, you know, stat hungry kind of guy. He just plays within the offense and does what he's supposed to do. But yeah, I'd be curious. It's an interesting debate. I'd be very curious.
Yeah, I think if Westbrook averages a triple double again this year, it's still not going to matter because he's so inefficient at it. And when you look at the numbers, the reason the Thunder are being so successful right now is because Paul George is back. Yeah,
it's all Paul George. Having a monster. Yeah, absolutely. I couldn't possibly disagree with that. You mentioned Kawhi Leonard. He was not very welcomed home last night.
I do not blame the Spurs crowd.
Devin was showing me a video prior to us recording, and his mom was not treated very well in the stands either.
Okay, that I blame them.
Yes, I do blame them for that.
But I do not blame them at all for booing Kawhi every time he touches the ball and all that. Don't go after the family. Come on.
No, you agree.
But yeah. Yeah, I would expect no less. After what he did last year, I would expect no less.
So I got a text about that game last night too, talking about the way the Spurs were guarding him. So I watched the first half of that game. Very interesting to see, almost as if Pop and the Spurs may have watched the game against the Jazz the other day, because instead of waiting until the end of the game, very early on in that game, they threw the doubles at him quickly to get the ball out of his hands. Often.
Yeah. Yeah,
and it played havoc with him for quite a bit. I mean, they were up by as much as I think 30 in the first half, or close to 30, but then in the second half, the Raptors made a game of it and came back. And I don't remember what Kawhi's final numbers were, but it was a big night for DeRozan, who ended up with a triple double. Had a really good game. DeRozan did. But it was just interesting to see the homecoming for Kawhi and the way things worked out last night.
Yeah, I was just pulling up numbers, and Giannis is the most efficient of the three, Giannis, James, and Kawhi, although they're all really good. And same thing goes with true shooting. Harden is actually a little more efficient than Leonard, but you also got to look at everything else Leonard contributes. Like their lines. Okay. Giannis is 26 points, 12 rebounds, 6 assists, 1.3 steals, 1.6 blocks. Leonard is 27 points, 8 rebounds, 2.9 assists, 1.6 steals, 0.5 blocks. Harden is 33 points, 8.6 assists, 6 rebounds, 2.1 steals, and 0.6 blocks. They're all efficiencies in the 50s. Giannis is 59%, while Kawhi and James are 54%. There's a lot of different things you can look at with the guys. What really makes Giannis stand out is his defensive rating is 99. He is really good on defense right now. And so his net is plus 18.
Yeah.
Harden is plus 8. Kawhi is plus 14, and that's just because Harden's a fine defender, but he's average at best, whereas his offense is just off the charts, whereas Giannis and Kawhi are both really good two-way players.
Right. Now, it's going to be interesting to see the MVP race as we head down the stretch. Not even mentioned here is the guy that I picked preseason who has had a good year, but his team has been horrible, and that's Anthony Davis.
Yeah, they're 14th in the West. You can't really talk about them.
Agreed. And he's having another great year. I mean,
he
could be in the talks for Defensive Player of the Year again, too. But again, just like you said, they're at the bottom of the West. They're not going to get much talked about because of it. So, all right. You wanted to talk All-Star voting. The All-Star voting is currently ongoing.
Yeah, we got our first round, and I mean, are there any real surprises? There are. I wouldn't say I was that surprised, but I was just annoyed that that's the way these things tend to go.
Yes, I am surprised.
You are surprised. Okay, let's go through them, and then we'll talk our surprises.
Okay,
let's do East first. East front court. Your top 10 are Giannis, Kawhi, Joel Embiid, Jimmy Butler, Jason Tatum, Blake Griffin, Vince Carter, Andre Drummond, Gordon Hayward, Al Horford. your East guards. Your top 10 are Kyrie, Dwayne Wade, Kemba Walker, Ben Simmons, Oladipo, Kyle Lowry, Zach LaVine, Jeremy Lin, Bradley Beal, John Wall.
There's two names, since we're going to break this up, there's two names on the East that maybe surprise me. 40-year-old Vince Carter and Jeremy Lin. What in the hell?
I attribute that to some overseas voting. Vince Carter, maybe because he's in the East now. I mean, if you look at the vote totals, the West has a lot more votes than the East, which is funny because when you go to vote, you're voting for West and East at the same time. But it's like about 20% of the people who vote just don't even bother to do anything with the East. Or maybe it's just more spread out. I don't know exactly what's going on there.
But how is Vince Carter getting more votes than, dare I say, Gordon Hayward? How?
Well, because Hayward's not having that good a year. See, this shows me the discrepancy of talent between the West and the East.
Okay.
Hayward's having a down year for him. He still makes the top 10. Vince Carter's 41. He's in the top 10. That's just what the East is. You look at these numbers, you look at these names, and if they were all in the West, how many of them would actually make an all-star squad? Not very many of them.
Agreed. It's just interesting to me. And the whole Gordon Hayward versus Vince Carter, you're right, Gordon hasn't had that great a year, but the thing I look at is Boston voters versus Atlanta voters. If you just stripped it down to just that, I would have suspected Boston voters would have swayed more.
Yeah.
I don't know. All right, West.
Okay, West. Front court. LeBron James, Luka Doncic, Kevin Durant, Anthony Davis, Paul George, Stephen Adams, Jokic, Kuzma, Draymond Green, and DeMarcus Cousins. Western guards, Steph Curry, Derrick Rose, James Harden, Russell Westbrook, Klay Thompson, Damian Lillard, DeMar DeRozan, Lonzo Ball, Devin Booker, and Chris Paul.
I'm leaving this one on Devin. There is one in the West that surprises Devin. He and I talked before the show. Go ahead, Dev.
Well, I don't know if it's a surprise, but I love Kuzma, but Kuzma is not an all-star. There's one, but that's just the LA voting. That's what's going to happen. As far as your guards, there's actually a few that I'm kind of surprised. Derrick Rose is the big one. You know, he dropped 50 on the Jazz, but I don't think he should be the second vote getter. But, you know, I think that's the fact that he has love coming from Minnesota, but also from Chicago.
And I'm going to say this, John, LA voting aside, Lonzo Ball, really?
Here's the thing. I think a lot of these, there's a lot of people who vote who aren't actually watching the NBA that much.
Okay. Yeah.
It's like they see names they recognize and like, and they just vote for them. And they're like, oh, Derrick Rose is back. They just vote for him. and Vince Carter. Oh, I like Vince Carter. I'm going to vote for him. Oh, DeMarcus Cousins. He's good. I'm going to vote for him. He hasn't played a single game, but he's in the top 10 because that's just the way fan voting is.
Yeah, fan voting should just go away. Well, if you ask me.
And I'm also going to go a step further. There's the feel good votes. Vince Carter, he's a legend. He's 40 years old. He's putting up numbers. We love him. And oh, that story for Derrick Rose, his comeback, blah, blah, blah. We could get on a separate topic on that one, and I'm not going to. But you know what I'm saying. Yeah. There's those heartfelt votes when it comes to those guys.
Well, we saw the same thing with Kobe Bryant.
Yeah, we did.
Kobe did not deserve the all-star games that he got towards the end of his career.
Nope.
I agreed.
But he's Kobe, and the Kobe stands are going to vote in full force.
Yeah, that's true. You want to talk a little bit about the way voting is happening this year versus the way it has in the past, too? I was very intrigued at the way they changed it.
I'm super glad they changed it. I was glad they did last year. When did they start it? Last year, 2 years ago? Whenever they did it, it righted some wrongs. Otherwise, Zaza Pachulia would have been starting in the All-Star game.
But what I mean is they aren't doing the hashtag vote on Twitter anymore. It's now a Google thing? Did I see that?
Oh,
right?
I haven't even noticed. I don't know. I went to NBA.com when I voted.
Yeah, and you can do that. But apparently, and I saw one of our follows, Argus11, had tweeted it out earlier this week, that there was a way he had tweeted out a link where you could go to Google And it's like a Google search. It just brings it right up. You can choose the West or the East, and you can go right through and vote for the guys that are on that list. So you don't even have to go to NBA.com. You just go to Google. It's very interesting.
All right. Goes to Google, types in NBA All-Star. There's the teams. And there's a link to NBA.com.
I'd have to find it. It was... Oh.
All right. So let's see if I click on a team, if it lets me vote. Oh, yeah. Yeah, you can do it right there. You click on the team and you can check the boxes.
Yeah, right there on Google.
Yep.
So they've kind of funneled it down and taken it away from your hashtags and everything else like that out there. And it's just going straight up on Google now, which is kind of a convenient and interesting way of doing it now. So, all right.
All right. I just voted for Jazz players in the West.
So I last on the list of NBA, we may not want to touch on it too much, but I thought it was of note. Gordon Hayward has a 35-point game a couple nights ago against the Wolves. Very good night for him too, mind you. So.
Well, good for him.
Yeah. He didn't miss a lot either. He was knocking them down. A lot of threes, just seemed a very efficient night for Gordon Hayward. So
never heard of her.
Yeah.
let's talk about someone else though. You missed a couple things, guys.
Oh, what did we miss?
You missed you want to talk about Vince Carter a lot, but you don't want to talk about what he did.
Do we want to save this for quick hits, or do you want to talk about it on the NBA news right now?
Well, we're kind of in that transition phase, so
let's transition to Devin's quick hits.
Okay. Vince Carter, oldest player ever to drop 20 plus in a game.
Wow.
At 41 years and 337 days of age.
Old man Carter putting it down.
Are you impressed?
Absolutely.
Yes.
I've seen him.
Any milestone like that, good for him.
I've still seen him put down a couple of 360 dunks in pre-game warm-ups. So, yeah, the guy still can put it down with the best of them.
Okay. You also missed Denver lost a player, guys.
Nick, like injury?
Nick Swaggy P. Young is no longer on the roster. Yeah.
Oh. Wow.
There was a trade in the NBA last night, but I didn't see the story about Nick Swaggy P.
What do you think this does to their chances of winning a championship? I mean, he's an NBA champion. I feel like they needed that on their team.
I felt like he was that booster for Jokic. I think they're in dire straits now.
Yeah, we'll see what happens. there's also been some talk. So this is what happens. LeBron James says this on his More Than an Athlete show.
He said a couple of things.
Talking about the win over the 73-win Warriors. And so that one right there made me the greatest player of all time. That's what I felt.
I don't disagree.
So, but people are going to agree, disagree. That's we can have that conversation every week. But with that in mind, I want to ask you guys, what do you think that did for his decision-making to go to LA? How important do you think that was, him feeling that he had already achieved that status and there was, you know, essentially nothing left that he had to prove?
I think that was a big part of it.
I think it was a factor. I mainly think he went to LA because he's thinking about his post NBA career
and his kids. Right?
Yeah, his kids. Like other things. I think he knew that if he went to LA, first year probably not much, second year probably recruit some people, have a good shot at a ring again. But yeah, I don't think he has anything left to prove. Well, and I think that was a factor in him going to LA. He just wanted to go to the big market. He wanted to go to Hollywood. He's getting involved in all kinds of different companies and stuff and his agency. And yeah, so
having nothing left to prove makes it a lot. I don't know about you guys, but it seems like LeBron has played much less burdensome this year. Like he's just been able to just play free, let the game just flow and enjoy it. Yeah.
Yeah.
So. Mm-hmm. Okay. I'm surprised you're not going to touch on his comments, the other comments he made afterwards about that series.
What was that?
Big thing came out yesterday. They were talking about where he was quoted in saying something about their effing minds. They've lost their effing minds or something like that. Where he was talking about the Warriors.
He was saying they make mistakes.
Yeah, but he mentioned after game five, I guess he had said in the locker room, and his teammates were saying this. He eyeballed the fact that Golden State was coming unhinged. Or if you will,
yeah,
and said,
yeah.
"Hey, he said it was after Game Six.
He said they make mistakes physically. They make mistakes mentally. You know,
yeah. It was interesting to read that.
Hey, let's hear your James Harden stat.
Okay,
this was before last night's game. He was averaging 40.8 points per game over his last 10.
Wow,
I could do that."
400 points over 10 games. That's insane.
Let's talk a little bit of football. No.
Oh,
miss one.
Okay.
Nurkic had a big night a couple nights ago. Had a 5x5. Are you impressed by that?
Yeah. Who was the last player that did it? Somebody put up that graphic up.
Probably Draymond.
Either Draymond or AK, because AK had a 5x5 when he was with the Jazz a couple times.
But here's the thing. He had a 20-point, 20-rebound, 5-assist, 5-steal, 5-block game.
Wow.
That's the first time that's ever been done.
Yeah, that's crazy.
So.
John?
Yeah. Crazy.
Okay, let's touch on football.
He's not amused.
College football champions, UCF, they lost their first game in a couple years. Do you think their dynasty run is over?
I think you got to burn that thing down, start over, fire everybody.
Yep, probably. Okay, Alan's laughing, so we'll move to the next
one. I'm not touching that one. That's good enough. I love the way you segued into it, so we're good.
Kyler Murray. Quarterback, Heisman winner from Oklahoma. There was an article that I saw saying that he should play football. He should follow in Russell Wilson's footsteps. Do you agree? Should he play football or should he play baseball? He's already been signed by the A's. What would you do if you were in his spot?
If you're getting good money, I would think for your own profession, baseball might be a better option because you can make more money. They don't have salary caps like the NFL, and you're not as likely to get injured. That's the way I see it.
I miss the days when there was the crossover between sports. You know, back in the day when Deion Sanders would play both, back in the day when, Bo Jackson would play both. I would love to see an athlete do that again. Yes, no.
It would be fun to see it again.
Well, I mean, you have seen guys who have the ability to.
Yes.
You know, there have been a couple guys from Notre Dame. Jeff Samardzija was a wide receiver, ended up playing baseball instead. Same with Pat Connaughton. Was drafted by the Orioles, I believe. Then went back to school, played basketball, got drafted by Portland. He's now with the Bucks, if I recall correctly. You know, but if basketball doesn't pan out, he still is young enough. He could go back and play baseball. I think it's just the overlap in schedule that poses a problem for some of the sports.
I agree. And I'm starting to question myself. Deion Sanders was one. What didn't he do? Didn't he
yeah,
do both?
Yeah, he did.
Yeah.
He did.
Okay.
Okay. You get a college football championship between Alabama and Clemson. Do you care at all?
No, I don't.
If Alabama loses, then that's about the only thing I care about.
Right, but this is the same matchup we've seen how many times over the last 4 or 5 years?
Right.
So, I don't know. Do we all agree playoffs need to be expanded?
Yep.
8 teams, does that seem like a good number?
It's a good start.
Well, I mean, that could give you your Power 5 conference winners and then give you 3 at-large bids. Make sure that one of those bids is secured for a G5 team so that you can get, like, a UCF or a successful Boise State or whoever in there. I guess we should talk NFL a little bit. Antonio Brown, sounds like he skipped out on some practices, and there's some happenings in Pittsburgh. Do you see him being traded?
I've seen the headlines, but if they do that, then it feels like the Steelers are going to be the next Raiders.
Yeah. Yeah. And if they do that, it feels to me, I mean, and this is really odd for me with the Steelers. The Steelers seem to be that team that aren't going to just scrap everything and start over again and build through the draft again. They don't seem like the type to have to do that. I don't see it happening, Dev. No, I don't.
And I kind of think they have to. But it's crazy. You know, they had the Le'Veon Bell situation, now to have this. You know, what could have been has really turned into a nightmare for the Pittsburgh front office.
Yeah. It's the money machine that is the NFL now, right?
Yeah. All right, let's talk NFL playoffs then. We are to wild card weekend, and so we will just limit it to that. Your first wild card game tomorrow, you have the Colts and the Texans. Who are you taking?
Ooh.
That's one of the toughest ones of all to really think about. I will go with the Colts.
And that's who I was going to pick, so I'll pick the Colts as well.
Okay. Your next game will be the Seahawks and the Cowboys.
I think Seahawks. Cowboys. When's the last time they won a playoff game?
The Cowboys?
Like 15 years ago?
Well, that suggests they're overdue. I'm going to go against the odds here and say the Cowboys win it. This one's a hard one for me to pick, too, because I don't like either team. Sorry, John, but I just...
Well, Seahawks came on strong late in the season.
Yeah, they did.
Do you see a reoccurrence of 12 years ago, John? Where
12 years ago.
The snap is made for the kick to win the game, and the quarterback, Tony Romo, bobbles it. And he goes to run it in, and he doesn't make it.
No.
Something will happen, because that's just what happens when the Cowboys happen to get into the playoffs. They just always throw it away. In fact, here's what I think is going to happen. I think the Seahawks beat the Cowboys, and then Jason Garrett gets fired.
Something that should have happened a long time ago.
The coaching carousel that is the Dallas Cowboys. Okay.
Okay, Chargers, Ravens.
Not really much of a carousel. He's been there forever.
Yeah.
In NFL years. All He's right. been there since 2010, I think.
By those standards. Okay.
Chargers, Ravens.
Chargers.
Gosh. I want to say Ravens because I haven't watched that much Chargers, but their record is so good, I have to go with Chargers.
Okay. And Eagles, Bears.
Bears. Keep in mind, not just the defense. My understanding is Foles is out. So they're down to what, their third quarterback now?
I think so. I believe I saw something about that.
I just think the odds are stacked against the Eagles. I think it's the Bears.
That reminds me of Chris D'Elia. I'm not sure if you've ever seen his comedy stand-up. He talks about, like, he'd watch sports if they were real Bears and real Eagles. I'm just like, that's a great matchup right there. All right. I think that's it for Quick Hits this week.
Awesome. All right. Moving on to our final segment, pop culture. John, you saw a couple of movies this week. And, of course, there's a Netflix show we want to talk about. But let's start off with the movies you saw.
The movie I saw in theaters this week was Bumblebee. Finally got around to seeing it. It is technically a prequel, I guess, since it takes place in 1987 when Bumblebee first arrived to Earth. Here's the thing. I've seen all the Transformers movies. I couldn't really tell you what happens in most of them. I don't think it really matters. Bumblebee was a nice pullback to have more of a character story. When you only have the one Transformer to deal with and he develops this relationship with Haley Steinfeld, the girl from Edge of 17 and True Grit, and she's been in a bunch of stuff. She's great. And what was different about this movie, it's the first Transformers movie not directed by Michael Bay. It was directed by Travis Knight, and he is, his background is mainly like stop motion animation. He's worked on movies like Coraline and The Box Trolls and Kubo and the Two Strings. And the screenplay was by a woman. I can't remember her name right now, but it just kind of had a different feel to the movie. And it was, it really leaned into 80s cliches. You had the mean girls from high school, and you had the jock stud villain military guy who just wants to destroy things and all that stuff. But most importantly, it was just about the relationship between a girl and her robot car.
By the way, screenplay, Christina Hodson, who did 2016 Shut In.
Oh, that's right. I did look her up, and her previous stuff wasn't that well reviewed. So it's cool that she was able to get this job, do it, and do it well.
Okay. Did they get some of the voices? Looks like I'm looking over it.
Yeah, Peter Cullen's back as Optimus Prime.
Yeah, I saw that.
Sorry.
Oh, bless you.
If I remember right, Angela Bassett was the voice of the main female villain Decepticon.
That's what it shows.
There was some fun stuff in there. Dylan O'Brien was the voice of Bumblebee at the beginning. He's from the Maze Runner movies. They explain why Bumblebee can't talk. He gets his vocal synthesizer, whatever it is, ripped out of his throat when Decepticons are trying to kill him.
So, John Cena, give me a gauge on this one. I've enjoyed him in movies, but it's not like his movies have ever been all that great.
I enjoyed him. You meet him at the beginning, and he's, I don't know, he even his name is Jack Burns. It's like an 80s action hero name. But when Bumblebee crashes on Earth and then the Decepticons come, and he doesn't really get the difference between the two. So when the Decepticons show up, they wind up killing a lot of his squad. And so through the movie, he's basically the villain. He even gets a scar from it. He's the villain who just thinks all of these robots are evil and need to be destroyed. And he has fun with it. I think John Cena is improving as an actor. And you know, he's good in Blockers. He was good in Trainwreck. I think he's improving as an actor, and I enjoyed him in this role. He did exactly what he needed to do in this role.
I'm seeing some voice actors that have been big over the years, Gray Griffin and Steve Bloom in particular. I am excited about the fact that both of them are involved in this.
Yeah, and on the Cybertron, the Transformers looked like the Transformers as I remembered them. Starscream and Soundwave and Cliffjumper, they all looked like they did from the 80s. You could tell who was who. It was really cool.
Does Optimus look like he did from the 80s? Because they really went with a much cooler looking semi truck in the first few Transformers films, and then when they went to that one, I believe as Age of Extinction, he went back to the old style, which really confused me, if you will. So they went with the older style here as well.
Well, they're their old style on Cybertron, and then you know Bumblebee is more of a waspy looking warrior, and then when he gets to Earth and he's able to conform what he wants to change into, he sees a VW bug and just picks that for his disguise, and it goes from there.
Okay. Yeah, I want to see Bumblebee. That's something my son's been talking about too, been wanting to go see it. So all right. Well, that's a movie to go see then. All right, let's move on to the elephant in the room, right? The way we started this podcast off, Devin and John, I want to sit back and just listen to you two talk about Bird Box, Netflix original series Bird Box, starring
Sandra Bullock.
Sandra Bullock.
According to Netflix, it is the most watched movie in the history of their platform after the first week of release. They said over 45 million people watched it.
Wow.
And if that was movie going people paying money for tickets, that would be $450 million. It's really hard to compare. But basically, not just for Netflix, but just like TV in general, anything in general, having a movie open that huge, I think, you know, it's become a cultural phenomenon already. It's inspired a lot of viral memes. And, you know, I liked it. I thought it was a good, tense, modest thriller, kind of in the vein of A Quiet Place or The Happening, even though The Happening was a terrible movie. Bird Box is a very good movie using a lot of similar aspects.
So if you were to rate it between the two, because I loved Quiet Place, would you lean towards...
Quiet Place is still better.
Is it?
Yeah.
Okay.
I don't know if I'd feel different if I saw Bird Box in theaters. No, I'd still say Quiet Place is better, but Bird Box is good. I liked it.
It's interesting to me that we've had 2 years in a row where you get A Quiet Place first and then you get Bird Box. Two films that, I mean, was this movie similar where it was silent or not really? Because Quiet Place was the silent. This wasn't as silent. Though.
Quiet Place didn't make noise. Bird Box is you can't open your eyes.
Okay, that's right. So you go from one movie, can't speak, to another movie, can't see. So yeah. All right, Devin, what did you think of this?
You know, I liked it. I didn't love it though. I don't know. When it comes to scary movies, it's not really my thing. I thought it was well done. When it started out, I thought the cinematography was going to be really, really good. It ended up just being kind of all right. You know, but like as it was showing the river and stuff, John, you know what I'm saying? I was like, wow, that's going to be a very aesthetically pleasing film. And it didn't come through that way quite like I expected or hoped.
Was it really horror or was it more of an intense thriller?
It's more of an intense thriller. Like you never do get to see the creatures. You see drawings of them at one point by someone who has seen them and lived to tell the tale, but you don't, I thought maybe by the end we'd have some CGI climax and it didn't really need that. I was fine with that. And sometimes it's best kind of left to your imagination. What's really just quite off camera.
And that was one of the twists that I liked was who had seen it and survived, if you will.
Right.
You know, that was a nice twist to it without spoiling it for people. John, what did you think of the ending? The ending for me, I wasn't a huge fan of. Like I enjoyed the film and then I got to the ending and I was like, whatever.
Huge fan is an anticlimactic or just.
Yeah, I know what you're talking about. And that wasn't that big of a thing for me either. I don't think it really mattered that they tried to make it this big moment for the end. And yeah, it was just kind of like, okay.
All right.
Yeah, it's really hard to talk about it without spoiling anything. But
if you watch it, you'll see the last minute and you'll be like, okay, that's what he meant.
Yeah.
All right.
But no, I mean, you can watch it. I think watching it just for the memes is kind of worth it, right?
Yeah, and it's got a really good cast. I mean, you got Trevante Rhodes from Moonlight. You got John Malkovich doing Malkovich things. And the... And it plays with the timeline because it goes back and forth between when everything first started happening and then 5 years later you have Sandra Bullock on the river with this boy and girl. And I really enjoyed that part of it. I didn't know the movie was going to do that.
And actually that's probably the part that I enjoyed the most is that switching of timelines, because when it starts out, I'll give you the starting of it is she is going to go get on the river to try and get to safety with her two children. And when that happened, I was like, I swear if I have to watch 2 hours of this lady going down a river, I'm going to lose it.
Yeah.
You know, because it was just like, that's going to be so boring. But the way that they did it, it kept you engaged. I enjoyed it.
Yeah.
Okay. Well, maybe I'll have to check it out. I haven't had a chance to yet. So transition, since we're on this subject of thriller / horror, Netflix did make the announcement this week. July 4th, we will be seeing Stranger Things. Season 3. You excited?
Yeah, they had wanted to get it out for Halloween, but they said they just couldn't get the effects done in time. So they took their time to get it right. And I'm glad they didn't wait a whole other year. I'm glad we're getting it in summer and not having to wait for Halloween again.
Same. I just was really disappointed we didn't get it sooner. I was hoping a Halloween release, but I, on the same token, I'm fine. I'm can't wait till it comes. Did you see the release of the poster graphic of it, I believe?
Yeah, I believe I saw it.
I don't remember.
Wasn't it like a summer camp setting?
Well, and
or
you had
like
fireworks
that?
In the sky.
Yeah, that's what it was.
And then Eleven was holding hands with
Mike.
Yeah. Interesting. I mean, you could pick apart that poster in and of itself, but yeah, I'm excited. So I was gonna let you know, John, I finally saw Aquaman. Saw that over the weekend as well. I see where you were going with your review last week. So I enjoyed it. It was entertaining. There were some moments, particularly with dialogue, that just made me go, huh? Or this is kind of cheesy.
Yes.
If that makes sense. There's just moments where I'm like, okay, are you guys really trying to force the issue with this dialogue? Because it really, it's almost as if they were saying the obvious of what you already knew anyway.
Yeah, they were really on the nose with a lot of that. And it takes itself about as seriously as a movie would that features a scene of the octopus playing the drums.
Yeah.
Wait, are we talking about Little Mermaid?
Well,
exactly.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah. You had an octopus play the drums, Little Mermaid, and you had an Aquaman. But the crabs do not sing.
Oh, I was going to say, if they sing Under the Sea, I'm going to watch this.
Now, John, I am going to say this. You remember the old Justice League cartoons when we were kids, right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
I did find myself, while watching this, at moments switching my brain back to those times, and the movie was just a little easier on the eyes, if you will. Because I was able to take some of those cheesy moments and go, and those who are like you and me, who have watched the old Justice League shows and know what it was like, you'll understand, because there was some cheesiness back then with that series. I mean, it wasn't the best series in the world. It was just entertaining for us as kids.
So cheesy.
Oh, it was horribly
cheesy.
Like 70
Super Friends, they'd fight the Legion of Doom, and then Wonder Woman would teach you a card trick.
Yeah, exactly. But the Aquaman in that show was the blonde-haired, muscle-bound, you know.
Yeah.
I mean, Jason Momoa was a better Aquaman, I think, than that guy. But there was a lot of cheesy one-liners from him back then. So as soon as I could switch myself into that mode and say, okay, I'm 10 years old all over again and I'm watching Aquaman and Justice League, I think the movie kind of settled down for me a little better. And then when he came, out in the end, looking like he did, I was like, ah, yeah, there's the classic Aquaman right there.
Yep.
So, but it overall was entertaining. I liked it. My son enjoyed it. So,
I do have one movie that I need to add in here.
Okay.
I watched a show. You guys have seen it. Everyone's seen it. But I watched for the first time Avengers Infinity War.
And?
I thought it was fantastic. Until I got to the end.
Yeah.
And I was like, wait a minute. This is not a complete movie. This is part one.
Yep.
Go watch the teaser trailer now.
Yeah, I'm going to have to.
And did you at least stick around for some of the post?
Yeah.
And see Samuel L. Jackson in classic Samuel L. Jackson.
Yeah, I think.
Mother.
Yep.
So
I stuck around. I was like, oh, cool. And I started it late. I started it at like 11:30, 12 o'clock.
Right.
And so by the time it got over, I was like, I stayed up till 2 a.m. to not get an ending.
I've had a few people see the trailer and go, wait, Ant-Man didn't die? And I go, people go back and watch Ant-Man 2 and watch the post-credit scenes, and you'll know why Ant-Man's going to be around for this next one.
I didn't watch Ant-Man 2.
Guess you need to.
I didn't watch Ant-Man 1.
Well, you need to see them both.
What?
If for no other reason than the laugh at Michael Pena moments.
I'm trying to get caught up. I'm getting there. But yeah, it was really good. Glad it's on Netflix.
Yeah. John, you wanted to talk best and worst.
Yes. My best will change over the next few months because that's just the way it works. Hollywood likes to save their best movies and put them on one screen in December and actually let the public watch them around February. But I put out my worst list earlier, and I'll just kind of go over what I thought were some of the worst movies I saw this year. The worst Netflix movie I saw this year was The Cloverfield Paradox. I was hyped for it. I liked the Super Bowl commercial. I watched the movie, and it was just this disjointed mess. Pretty disappointed in it.
Cloverfield.
Really good cast,
bomb.
But yeah. The other two Cloverfield movies are better. And they're not really that closely connected, but anyway. And then of the other movies, movie called Terminal that starred Margot Robbie, who I love, and it had people I like in it, like Simon Pegg and Mike Myers, and it was this movie trying to be really groovy and stylish, and nothing really added up. And then it does this. It's like the whole movie was set up for the twist ending, and then you get to the twist ending, and the twist ending is so ridiculous that I'm like, why did I even watch this? This is just silly. The 1517 to Paris, that came out in February. It was directed by Clint Eastwood. It's about the three guys who stopped a terrorist attack on a train. He cast the three guys in real life for that movie, which was risky, and it didn't really work. None of them are good actors, and that like bled out to the rest of the movie. Even the good actors put in bad performances. It was just really slow and lame, and I would say anyone curious on seeing it, it's worth watching the last 10 or 15 minutes, but everything before that is terrible. I also did not like The Nun. It's part of the Conjuring universe. It had a really cool trailer. That trailer is the best part of the whole movie. It was really dark and slow, and I mean like you really couldn't see what was going on dark. And it was just a bunch of jump scares that didn't really have any build to them or efficiency or anything. So it was just kind of a waste. Of the best movies I saw, I will say I think my favorite movie all year was Black Klansman. It's Spike Lee's best movie in a long time, and it's funny, and it has some dramatic moments, and it's based on true story. And it takes place in the 70s, and then Spike does something in the end to kind of tie it to our day that I thought was really powerful and effective. The lead is John David Washington, who is Denzel's son, and this, I think, is going to put him on the map to where he's no longer just Denzel's son. He is now the guy from Black Klansman. Adam Driver was amazing in it. I watched this going, man, he's going to get nominated for an Oscar someday, and he's getting nominations for this, and I'm glad to see it. Because he's a really versatile actor and very
yes, he is.
Natural. And it's just when you see him in stuff like Last Jedi and Logan Lucky and Silence, and then you see what he's doing here, I think he's just one of the best young actors working today. Another one of my favorites was A Star is Born. I think it's your classic Hollywood tale told really well. I think it's Bradley Cooper's directorial debut. If it's not, then it's
maybe
second movie.
See why you're looking all
really good. Yeah, go ahead and look it up. He might have directed Burnt. I can't remember, but he does a really good job directing here. He does a really good job with making Lady Gaga look good. He makes himself look good. I read somewhere that, or maybe someone just told me it, but Lady Gaga said that if she was going to be in the movie, that he had to sing his own songs. So he took vocal lessons for a couple of years. To make sure that he could. And you can just see the love in everything coming together for that movie.
Yes, and then another one. It is his debut, yes.
It is his debut, okay. Another one that I really loved this year that really surprised me, kind of came out of nowhere, was Sorry to Bother You. I had heard about it in the summer. I never quite got around to seeing it. Saw it popped up on Hulu last month, so I went ahead and watched it. And it is just quirky and wild and goes some strange directions, and I love a movie that is unafraid to be original like that. It's about this guy, and it's kind of an alternate universe where he gets a job as a telemarketing, and all the black employees there say that if you use your white voice, then your sales will go up. And they kind of teach him how to do a white voice. And then when he does it, it's the voice of David Cross from Arrested Development. And he's able to like instantly advance up the corporate ladder. And it goes some amazing places from there. Armie Hammer eventually shows up as the boss. And he's really charming and funny and evil. And it's kind of hard to explain. And it also has Tessa Thompson. And I like seeing her. That was really good. And then Marvel had a lot of good movies this year. I liked all of their outings. I liked Black Panther. I liked Infinity War. I liked Ant-Man and the Wasp. Other movies I really enjoyed this year, I would say A Quiet Place. I would say Green Yes. Book. And then it was a good year for documentaries. And my favorite documentary I saw this year was Won't You Be My Neighbor about Mr. Rogers.
Oh, my goodness. Very well done. I'm not going to even shy away from saying I may have shed a tear or two during that documentary.
Yeah.
So good.
Yep.
Is that the full of the list, the extent of the list?
That's what I'll say. I'll say other movies I really enjoyed. I really enjoyed the latest Mission Impossible movie.
Yes.
I really enjoyed Annihilation with Natalie Portman. It came out early in the year, but people should hunt that down. And then another movie I enjoyed was called Searching, and it starred John Cho from the Star Trek movies. And it all takes place. The whole thing is from other people's screens, from computer screens and iPhone screens. It's kind of one of those type of movies, but it's just all about a dad whose daughter goes missing. And the more he tries to find her, the more he realizes just how he didn't really know her that well, that she has this whole other life and persona on social media. And it's a low budget, well done, tightly wound thriller that I think people ought to hunt down as well.
I'm going to add to your list too. It as far as add an addendum, at least from my perspective, I enjoyed Bohemian Rhapsody this year too.
Yeah, that was good.
I mean, was it a best film of the year? No, but I thought from a nostalgic point of view, from a music standpoint, it delivered to me on so many levels.
Yeah.
So, Alan, are you going to do a list?
No.
I'm wondering if Daddy's Home 2 is going to make another appearance this week.
Oh, I have I had some flack this week because I got a text the other day from one of our listeners about it.
Oh, I got one too.
Yeah, I know you did because he sent me screenshots of it and said that he sent you a text that if you're looking to replace me, that he's willing to jump in.
Yeah.
It was John. It was Brett. Brett's texting us and. Yeah. He sent me a screenshot that he had sent Dev and said, hey, if you're looking for a replacement for Alan and his bad takes, I'll take over.
No, I remember Downright Dave gave you a bad time, I think.
Yes, he did. He started to withdraw his hug status that he had put me at, hugger. Yeah. So, yeah.
No one wants a hug from the guy who says Daddy's Home 2 is a fantastic film.
Yeah. I didn't say it was fantastic. I said I just liked it.
No one wants a hug from the guy who doesn't like Elf and thinks Daddy's Home is better than Anchorman.
The thing is, when Brett listens to this, I hope he hears this statement. Brett, as bad as those takes were for me, there are some takes that you make in text message to me that I'm not sure that these two could possibly handle when it comes to the NBA takes. I'm just going to leave that there.
John, do you remember when Alan said that Mozgov would be the most improved player or sixth man of the year or something like that?
Stop it.
Yeah.
Or when I said that Lonzo Ball was the rookie of the year.
All right.
That's it. We're going to stop before this gets out of hand. All right, guys.
Okay.
Thank you all for joining us this week. It was a jam-packed episode. Lots to talk about. We appreciate you being along. Look for us on Facebook and Twitter, Jedi and Germs. You can, of course, listen wherever you listen to podcasts. Tell your friends, tell your family, tell those you care about in the NBA world to listen to us. We've got lots to talk about and would love to have more people join the discussion. Leave us a 5-star review or a rating on iTunes, Facebook, wherever you go. And thank you all for being with us. 2019, here we come. Thank you all, and we'll talk to you soon, John. Take us out.
Hi, everybody.